everybody. If you were thinking, wow, that track just rocks, I'll have you know our very own Zach, who is on our worship team, made that by himself. And he's playing all the instruments. And I just think that's so cool. Let's hear it for Zach. That's amazing. I think that rocks. And yeah. So today we are in our second week of our series in the book 1 Peter. We started it last week, and it's all about living a Christ-centered life in the midst of a chaotic world. Last week, Joel set us up really well to understand that living a life set apart doesn't mean we are living differently for different sake, but we are living with our identity in Jesus. We're not seeking power or status, but we are living to love others. Also, shout out to Joel. He did have a birthday this week, so if you want to send him a text saying happy birthday, he's on vacation today, so we hope he's having a blast and that he had a great birthday. But Joel explained last week how so much of life can be dark and gray, and how life with Jesus gives us light and vibrance. It was a great tee-up to what we're going to be reading in 1 Peter chapter 2 today. We're going to be looking just at two sets of two verses total today. And I think the best thing to do is to dive right in and look at 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 9 and 10. They'll be on the screen and I'm going to read them. But you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. Once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. So starting with these two, I want to mention the titles that come up in verse 9 of chosen people, royal priesthood, holy nation, special possession, are calling back to Old Testament passages in Exodus and Isaiah that talk about the kingdom of God. They're mentioned here to connect us back to history and also bring a new layer of what they mean to the original readers of this passage and even to us now here today. It's important to me to start here in verse 9 because it's describing who we are. We are a chosen people. We are a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession. And this is the core of our identity. We are beloved. And in verse 10, we see that we are called out of darkness into God's wonderful light. Once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God. We are part of a family, like Caroline was talking about during worship this morning. I think this verse here, verse 10, is what this whole series of aliens and strangers is pointing to. We are surrounded by dullness and darkness and then called together into God's wonderful light. I wanted to start here with these two verses as our foundation so that we can remember that our identity comes from how God sees us, which is chosen, royal, holy, special, and called into the light. And I want us to carry that with us as we go deeper today. And so I'm just going to read it one more time and just let it kind of settle on us as we keep going. But you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. Once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. When I read those verses, I feel like God is smiling at us, and I like to carry that with me, with us. So we start here with who we are, and then we'll take a look at the next two verses. Katalia, I was wrong about the order of my slide, so sorry. It's just two verses, though, that we're going to go to next. they'll give us some direction about what it means to be verses 9 and 10. So here is what Peter says about what life can look like in just the next few verses, 11 and 12. He says, "Dear friends, I urge you, as foreigners and exiles, to abstain from sinful desires which wage war against your soul. Live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us." So before we get too deep into this section, I just want to call out one detail about the mention of pagan. In this context of this book and this chapter, Peter is not talking about a specific group of people. Rather, he's talking about people in general, people whose customs and cultures of the day were not traditionally Christian or Jewish. He's primarily acknowledging communities outside of Jewish law, not targeting like a specific people group. I just wanted to say that in case that word stood out to anybody. So now let's take a look at how these first two verses, 9 and 10, about our identity connect to these second two verses, 11 and 12, about what to do. In verse 11, Peter is encouraging his readers and us to abstain from sinful desires. This isn't quite as inspiring as the verses that come before it. He doesn't really give us much help knowing exactly what to do with that. And probably left to our own devices, we may interpret that as an instruction to not make bad choices, not to do things wrong, and to make sure we're following the rules. Fortunately, I think there's more to this verse than just that initial understanding. Because in verse 12, Peter is inviting us to live what he labels as good lives that stand out to those around us, lives that look different from other people. So we see that in verses 9 and 10, we are given many special titles to describe us, and we are invited into God's wonderful light together. That is awesome. And then we get verses 11 and 12 and see that our lives are supposed to look different, and that difference is that we are avoiding temptation. So what does that really mean for us? What can that look like for us? I think there are a lot of ways that we could interpret and practice these verses in our lives. I know it has changed for the way that I approach it over the course of my life. When I was in college, I participated in a campus ministry, and I was surrounded by young Christians all the time. My roommates that I lived with were in the same ministry, and a lot of our friends were too. And we had a lot of conversations about wanting our lives to look different from the college scene that we were immersed in. There were talk about what decisions we were making and how they were different from our classmates and how we wanted our lives to look so different that someone would ask why. When I was a sophomore, I went to visit Eddie at his school in Washington, D.C. for a weekend, and I do have a photo that is not from when we were sophomores. This was from the year before, but that's crazy. Ed and I were so young, and I really am only showing this because you can imagine me in college, and Eddie in college. That's us, which is very fun. Thanks, Catalia, for that. But I went to visit Eddie at his school. We went to different colleges, and I saw visiting him as an opportunity for me to demonstrate to anyone at his school how my life was set apart from this typical college experience. And I remember a moment of hanging out with some of his friends and feeling like such a champ for saying, "No thanks," when someone offered me a beer. And I remember thinking, this moment must have been the kind of life that Peter was talking about. More likely than not, none of the people there remember that 20-year-old Val didn't drink that beer, and that encounter may not have sang out to them that I was living a holy life. And while I don't regret not drinking until I was 21 or any of the other quote-unquote good decisions I made in college, I think that sometimes for me at that time, it was really important that my life looked really good. And I made a lot of choices that were outwardly good and in line with the expectations of the people I was surrounded by. And I think there were a lot of moments throughout my college experience where looking Christian made me feel really good, and that was really important to me. And I share this because as we're looking at these verses in 1 Peter, I want to encourage us that our appearance isn't the point. It can be easy to read these verses as don't let anyone see you sin, or don't let anyone know you can mess up, or don't let anyone whatever. We could probably make a list of things that we wouldn't want people seeing us do. But I really think Peter is wanting his readers to go beyond just the performative space where people just look really Christian and into a deeper space to understand why or how any life change could happen. And I think there's something really rich when we are genuinely wanting what Peter calls good lives. When we get caught up in living our lives in a performative way, we become self-serving, and it's easy to feel like there are expectations or conditions on how we show up in our lives. A vibrant life with Jesus that we are exploring and unpacking in this series is less about what we didn't do and more about engaging and connecting with Jesus, pursuing the things that don't point back to us. I think a crucial piece of how we live our lives is not just about what we avoid, but what we are going towards. This is something I've been thinking a lot about as I'm growing up and making intentional choices about my life. Am I doing something to avoid something else, or am I doing this to go towards something? Eddie and I will describe a decision as a towards move when we feel like it is aligning with something we value. So in verse 11, Peter says to abstain from sinful desires, and I think the best way to do that is to go towards something purposeful. What do we go towards but the wonderful light that we are called into in verse 9? How do we walk towards this wonderful light but by engaging with the community around us? Like how verse 10 is reminding us that we were not a people, but now we are a people of God. We are in it together. And it sounds really great, going from darkness to light and adding color to the gray, but it can also end up in practicality and application, feeling uncomfortable or vulnerable sometimes. Since pursuing this vibrant life with Jesus is not self-serving. It comes with moments in front of Jesus and in front of each other of appearing weak or needing help or admitting wrongdoing and asking for forgiveness. When I was in college and hoping Eddie's friends would be so moved by my choice not to drink, I was really standing on shaky ground. What I was doing was hoping they would see me as different, not my life with Jesus as different. And if the goal of our actions is only for people to notice us, then it's only in service to us. And even though I'm up front preaching today, I'm not here to tell you what you need to do or don't do in your day-to-day life, but I am here to invite you to walk alongside each other as we walk out of the darkness and into the wonderful light together. So much of our daily walk is impacted by who we are walking with, and we are given this gift here to walk together. That means that seeing people in this building today, or who are usually in this building but are out of town this week, seeing the people that we are with as our family, as the people that are worthy of our grace and our time and attention. Bonus points for me because a lot of my real family is here. That means that going out of this building, knowing that life set apart isn't about you looking good, but it is about us moving towards Jesus together. The beautiful thing about these verses in 1 Peter chapter 2, is that they remind us of who we are. They invite us out of the darkness into the wonderful light. And they encourage us to live not as a bunch of individuals making, you know, the right choices, but as a body learning and growing together. I personally am so grateful to be figuring out what life with Jesus looks like alongside the people here at Love. The community at this church has been a huge part of how I experience life with Jesus. So it's an honor today that Eddie and I get to dedicate Ren with this church family, because we believe that we will raise her not just to follow the rules or to have a life that looks different, but to know how loved she is and to make decisions that move towards that love. And I think what better way to move towards love than to participate in communion together? It's a special time that we have each Sunday to remember the love that Jesus had for us by giving his life on the cross. We are all invited to the table to first take the bread and remember Jesus' broken body, and second, dip it in the cup to remember his shed blood. The body broken and blood shed for each of us to be able to walk into his wonderful light. As we participate in this together, I want to reiterate that God's love is for all of us and that we are all invited to his table. So as we come, you'll take a piece of the bread, you'll dip it in the cup, you'll come down this side, you'll get it there, you'll head back down the front, up back to your seat. And as we're doing that, I want you to think about walking towards love as you are coming down, and then going back to your seat, sitting with love. And when we leave here together, I want you to think about going with love as we do it. I'm nervous about the microphone as I move. I just don't want to freak anybody out, including myself. All right. If I talk the whole time, then it works. That's magic. So we have our body, and we have our cup, and you are all invited.